Hi, people. Welcome back. I'm Amonte Hall, and you're listening to The True Tone Show, where I interview people in their truth and have conversation in tone. Today, I have stand-up comedian, writer, producer, creator, and star in the animated series The Matumbulas. I have Zul Manzi with me. I'm super excited to have a conversation with him. Very, very talented individual, not afraid to take risk in his art. Zul, how are you doing today, sir?
Can't complain, Amonte. You know, just being out here, just trying to stay out of trouble. How about yourself?
I'm good. I was doing some noteworthy research on you, and I kept hearing you talk about James Brown. Is he a pretty big, crucial pivot in your life?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You definitely did some great research. That's a great way to start this off. James Brown has a big impact on me. Going back to once I saw him back in 2003 at the BET Awards. Well, I wasn't there live, but I was watching it, you know, at home. And yeah, that had a profound impact on me. Had a big influence on me. And reason why, of course, his music. You know, big fan of his sounds, and you know. Funky drummer, cold sweat, and I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Just open the door, I'll get it myself. Just to name a few. But mainly his business, you know, back in the late 60s, you know, this dude, you know, he pressed his own vinyl. He owned his own record label and distribution, and he also owned his own radio station. So it's like, if this brother was able to do it back then in the 60s, then, you know, as a black man, you know, there should be no reason why we can do it now with the more accessibility.
Do you feel like his ability to get your attention with visuals as well as his unique style, like what imprinted on you? Like what, when you think of James Brown, what comes to mind right now?
Pretty much just his impact to just create something that wasn't done before, you know, something like funk music, the sound, you know, like especially back then in the 60s, you know, everything has stemmed from somewhere as an origin, you know, and for him to pretty much to create a whole new thing just from scratch. I mean, nobody wasn't doing funk before him. And so and how James Brown essentially became the tree branch for many of the music that follows suit, you know, of course, with hip hop, you know, James Brown is quintessential of the sound of hip hop. So with the sampling, and then even before hip hop, just with, you know, Funkadelic with George Clinton and Bootsy Collins and those guys, and how much, you know, the band members also stem from, you know, James Brown and what he was doing. And so a lot of the, for me, you know, I listen to a lot of his music just because of just the sound of, you know, of this funk music, and it kind of just gets me energized, gets me amped, just kind of boost up my energy, you know, and then of course, you know, just his soundtrack album of, you know, that he did for blaxploitation films as well. Yeah, just, and then just his performance too, you know, just his energy on stage. And that's how I kind of like to exemplify in some ways, you know, where when I do my work, doing stand up, or when I'm doing my voiceover recordings, you know, in the studio, I get very energized. I feel like if you're not sweating, you're not working. Hey. And that's kind of like the James Brown model. It's like this dude sweat. And I was like, all right, that's the man that's working right now.
Yeah, I think that's a well said statement. And I find it interesting because I don't want to put like crazy expectations on you, but I feel like with the random like sayings, I could feel the presence of that energy. Like it's not a far reach to be like, okay, I can see why he likes James Brown, just by listening to some of your art and your projects and obviously the show. You know, you have a pretty vast taste in music. Did you grow up listening to a lot of music? Cause I know you like a lot of stuff. You're not afraid to listen to whatever.
Yeah, no, music has been very, you know, in the beginning, you know, I was, you know, a rapper, but, you know, I'm not going to bust, you know, 8 bars for y'all. you know, I was rapping a little bit when I was like 6. So my Tanzanian community, back in Massachusetts, they used to have this thing called New England Yamoja, where essentially it was like the uncles would like play soccer. They're already like in their 40s, so you know they're already losing their breath by 5 minutes into the game. But after the game was over, they'll have this talent show, and that was my first time ever performing ever, like on stage in front of people. Yeah. I was rapping when I was 6 years old, alongside with my brother and a couple other family friends.
You weren't nervous?
At six, no, I wasn't nervous because you know, as a kid, like I was kind of like you remember that character in Wild Thornberries, like the little brother character? I forgot his name.
Nigel? No, what is it? I can't remember. Benny or something like
Nigel,
that.
Nigel, I remember it's the dad. Yeah, that's yeah. The kid's name, but...
He'd be like, what? That dude was like tripping
yeah,
out.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah, that was like literally, that's like, I have VHS footage of me, like oh there goodness. Was like a story of me, like when I was maybe 3 years old, I used to take a glass of orange soda. And then I would tell the television, like, man, this TV is hungry. And I dumped the orange soda inside the TV. Like, that was me when I was a kid.
So the character's name is Donnie. Yeah.
Donnie, that's right, yeah. So I was pretty much with Donnie. I was going, like, man, just kind of. Maybe that's why I also like James Brown a lot, too, because I used to scream like this. Just like, what's going on?
You know? You ever slide across the floor like, give me some juice? Like,
oh yeah, yeah. Like I was to the point like my parents had to do a prayer.
Oh my god!
Because they were just like they did not expect. You know, most kids, especially Tasmanian kids, you know, it's just very mellow and just kind of, you know. And I was just so off the wall, and so that's why when I started to rap. You know, I was not nervous that first year. It was that second year was when I had stage fright because we did it in a different place. Mm. And I was rapping over this atrocious song, Uchi Wally Wally by Nas. And wow. I should not be rapping over at seven. And I dropped the mic and then I ran off stage.
that's wow. That's a story, man. Oh, man, that's some good stuff. Yeah. I recently had Richie Kamchoon on. When this episode drops, his will be out for a couple weeks. Can you talk about working with Richie? I know he is a creator in his own right. How important is that to have someone else around you that also understands the process of creating their own show?
Absolutely. So I met Richie through a casting call. So going into this new season of Matumbula's, you know, it was a lot of... a big step for me, at least professionally, you know, working with Quality TV and getting this deal to then produce pretty much their very first ever original series. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure that talent wise, you know, we had a good selection of people that could do the characters, especially the newer characters that we have in this season. So I put out a casting call essentially to cast people who were of African descent for certain characters. Yeah. We had already good balance, but I was like really, you know, instinctive of wanting to have people who can do the specific accents, right? Rather than kind of like doing cliche Michael Blackson accents.
Oh my goodness.
Just kind of wanted to do things that are just a little bit more instinctive to the character, because those accents sometimes, it gets so running dry, you know. Yeah. It's kind of like a one big Negro effect. Mm-hmm. Where it's like all Africans talk like this, and that's so cliche.
Yeah, so you're able to like get in and out of character really well, which is hard. Like I noticed that when I listen to you, you're like able to just switch it on, which is really good.
Oh yeah. I kind of my brain switches very fast. So like, you know, I do a lot of mimicking and everything. So, so I just wanted to kind of just put that out there. And that's how I put that out on first on Instagram. And then I went on Facebook, this Facebook page called Who You Know. And then I got an email from Richie back in September of 2022. Mm-hmm. And he sent me, I sent him a couple of characters that we were going to be introducing for the first time and the new season, and he brought back to me demo, because I was like, I wanted to get some demo voiceovers of the characters, and yeah, he nailed it, you know, and it just came out great. And so, and then the great thing a part of that too was the fact that he also was now, you know, living in New York, and I'm also based in New York, so that also made it easy to have the voiceover sessions to be done in person.
Yeah.
So then that way we can, you know, better direction and, you know, better improvising with the characters and such. So when we did our first voiceover session back in November of last year, it was great. Like, it was our first time meeting, but we had a couple of Zoom meetings and such. But then once we kind of met in person, it felt good the knowing chemistry that was it there. Wasn't awkward. It was automatic, you know. So myself, Richie, and then also co-director of the episode and co-writer of the series, Chris Yates, we came together from Springfield, Mass. And it was just pretty much just like, it was just as if we already knew each other, you know. It was just a very, very,
isn't
like,
it strange?
At ease.
It's strange. Mm-hmm. It's strange how so much things have like a what I call flow, you know, like when it's supposed to happen, it just kind of fits together. It's like the stream and it all is headed in the same direction. And it has so much chemistry to it. Sometimes there's roughness, you know, sometimes there's challenges, but all in all, it seems to have this flow to it. And I love hearing stuff like that in everyone's story. Let me ask you this. I heard you talk about the quote, by yourself meetings. How powerful or impactful are those for you?
Repeat, what was the quote again?
Yeah, so I've heard you say, like, you have these by yourself meetings. And
oh.
Like, what, like, because does good stuff come out of it? Do you set time just to write bits? Is it a reflection? Is it a prayer? Like, what comes out of those meetings?
Man, you really did your research. Yeah, do you work for ICE? I'm surprised you know all this information about myself. I'm like, yo, are we doing a podcast? I'm trying to get my family deported.
Oh, I would never. I don't know if I don't know if ICE would come get me. I don't know. They might try to deport me too.
Association. Okay, we go together.
Do you work for ICE? That was great. That's a great bar. Oh man. By the way, you're my first comedian, like legit comedian. So this is great. I love this.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, no, I feel honored. You're right. I do by myself meetings because, you know, nowadays when people ask me like, "Hey, Zul, how you doing?" My phrase most of the time is, "I can't complain." And it's because I just find that a waste of time, you know, telling everybody what's going on in my business and my life and everything sound like a complaint, because what are they going to do for me? They can't really do much to help me at the end of the day as an adult, just to kind of keep it real. So I have these by myself meetings because the only person that's really going to hear everything that I have to say is me. And the only person that really has to help me out most of the time is going to be me. And I think that, and when other people see you doing something on your own, it's going to have to then prone in their mind, like, hey, let's help this guy out. Because it's rather than kind of like going around and trying to find help, I believe that you got to have to make it out on your own and see that people are seeing you doing it on your own. That will propel folks. Okay, this guy is self-sufficient. Let's be the ones to then assist him. And so, so these by myself meetings is just ways for me to kind of get myself, like I do a lot of walks outside and, go around in the parks and just kind of, just kind of have these talks to myself as far as like, what do I need to do next and what moves do I need to do. And, and I'm also, a religious person as well. I'm also Muslim. So when I do complain, you know, with anything goes on, I just, you know, just talk to God. And then I just kind of like reassure that to myself, and how can I display that with everything that I need to do to make the best decisions that I have to do moving forward. So that's kind of like where those by myself meetings pretty much curate in my world.
And are they scheduled times, or is it just like, I need this now, so I got to go do it?
I do it at, like, literally any time that just spews out, you know. Okay. You know, so like whether it's just in the morning or if I'm just, you know, walking outside, it's pretty much just like, you know, nothing scheduled. You know, mm-hmm. I have a go on, like, on my Google Calendar, like a meeting at 3 p.m. with me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of like in general, like it just kind of just comes out when I just need to vent or when I just need to, you know, just get myself locked in for anything that's prepared for the day.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, one thing I really appreciate about you, even in the show, and we're going to get to it, I don't want you to think I forgot the Matumbulas, is you're not afraid to, the way you integrate the Muslim faith into the show, it's nice. And it's not forceful. It's welcoming. And I think it will help combat a lot of different evils people face with just the name. You know what I mean? Even with certain faiths, and it feels like there's a fight against everyone's first initial encounter with it. But there's a good thing about it. There's a healthy thing to it. And I like that you integrate that well within the show, as well as, you know, whenever you're being asked about it, it's not a forceful thing. You're like, yeah, this is who I am, Tanzanian. I have a Muslim faith, and as well, I'm doing this thing, and I do comedy, which you're gonna get some funny from that. So I really appreciate that from you. Let me ask you this: you had a heavyweight in Little Rel, who is also the head of comedy at Quali TV, correct?
Yeah,
at the time he was.
Yeah.
What was the support like in that moment? I mean, he's done a lot of stuff. Did you get to talk to him and get some ideas? Did you even want his support in any way? Or, you know, what was that encounter like at the time?
Well, yeah, it was very left field. You know, when I submitted the Matumbulas back in October 2020, in the past, you know, I've done a lot of comedy sketches and things like that, and you know, most of the stuff I've done at that point have always gotten rejected, so I kind of just gotten immune to that. So so when I had the, you know, the episodes, you know, at first they were just up on YouTube, but I was like, if I just leave it up on YouTube, I feel like it's just gonna fizzle out quickly. You know, it feels like, you know, I did all this work just for it to kind of like disappear up in the clouds. And then that's it. So I was like, you know, let me see if I can submit to Quali TV, which already by that point I was already a subscriber on there. And when I saw the submission page, I was like, yeah, you know, let's just give it a try, right? You know, I'm already, you know, 0-15 at this point. So, you know, it won't hurt if I go 0-16.
Yeah.
So when I submitted, later on that month, I saw a press release that Lil Rel was going to be the head of comedy for Quali. But I didn't really think of much as far as how that's going to affect me. I just thought that's great for Quali so that they can get, you know, extra eyes on their platform and then and more people to subscribe. So then around Thanksgiving time of that year, I got back from Deshauna Spencer, who is the founder and the CEO of Quali TV. When I submitted a few episodes, she enjoyed it. And then I told her, like, I had, like, seven episodes. And then after that, I had a licensing agreement. First time I ever had that. And I was like, oh, okay, now we're in serious business.
Yeah.
And then everything looked good and I signed it, that next day I had a video call with Deshauna and Lil Rel.
Wow.
Whom, you know, when I was in high school, you know, remember watching his stand-up special, Relevant, and then watched his sketch show at the time on True TV called Friends of the People, big fan of the Carmichael show. So it was like, oh, wow, like, you know, like this is, it was, you know, it was just
you were
cool
nervous?
Just to speak to him.
I'd have been nervous. Maybe it's because it's the thing you like, right?
Yeah. Sorry?
No, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, I was saying, I was, how can I say, I was more like very overly curious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't say I was nervous. I was just kind of more of like just very green. And so talk to him in the beginning, it was like, okay, all right, like the first couple minutes, but then afterwards, and then it just became a normal conversation for over 45 minutes. And then, like, after that, the next week, we had a, because what he was doing at the time, he was doing, like, a lot of, anytime when he would curate the comedy content that was submitted to Quelly that him and Deshauna would select, he will have, like, these IG lives to kind of, like, interview the newer Quelly creators on his Head of Comedy channel. And then the next day, they would be, it would be streaming on the platform. So I was the very first person to be interviewed on his IG live for Quelly TV. And so, and then it would just kind of, like, set the tone and to start streaming from there. And I was just like, man, that was a quick couple weeks, you know, just like, you know, never thought to be in that position. And then just kind of went from there. I was like, all right, nigga, you know, we're here now.
Yeah, I think also, you know, it's really interesting because he wasn't afraid to really talk about the project you had. And he, at the time, it seemed like he had a lot of faith in it, which helps people buy in. You know what I mean? It felt like a genuine interest even when he was talking about it, as well as, you know, the article that was dropped or the press release in Business Insider, you know, even them having you in there. And it was just really nice to see the symmetry and the commitment from that. I want to talk some comedy. You know, you've done stand up, you've worked with a lot of stage. It's hard to be on stage. It's hard to say something and it's hard to perform something. Which do you prefer most? Do you like to say the thing or do you like to perform the thing?
I'll probably say, I think it's just a mixture, you know, I think it's pretty much a mixture of both for me, to have the joke, because I know certain comedians have their own styles. I know a lot of comedians kind of like just going to go on stage and riff and things. And but I particularly like write my specific material and then just try it out. And, you know, I do like just the mix of it, of saying it and just performing it. And I think just trying to saying the joke in terms of like, all right, is the joke on its own funny? And then if I have to act out certain things with my physical, you know, contributions and, you know, with my athleticism, if I could get into the character of what I'm doing. Yeah, I think it is a good balance. Like, I like to kind of to try to do balance of the material, because I feel like if as long as I have the material right, then I can take that anywhere. And that's really how the origin of the Matumulus came to be, was the very first episode from season one, Standout Student, that is derivative from my stand-up comedy routine about my teacher and not knowing how to pronounce my name. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of like me wanted to do an animated short about my stand-up routine. And then it started to build from there. And so I just kind of wanted to use that as a system. Like, all right, like anything that I do on stand up, how could I translate this onto screen, or how can I translate this into script format? Mm-hmm. And I think the repetition of doing more stand up can help, you know, helps me to determine, like, there is a rhythm of how jokes are being laid out from set up, punchline, you know, things like that.
Yeah, talk about how hard it is to get a laugh, because I feel like that is one of the most, like, overrated and underrated thing, because people don't understand what it takes to actually do it. You can't just go up there and wing it. You know, you're most likely to bomb. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's any given day. Nothing's, I feel like with stand-up, nothing is guaranteed. Like, you can do the same material and in the same night. Like I had moments where I go on stage one place with the same material and we get okay laughs, and then that same night I go to another place and it will get great laughs.
How do you manage that? Like, how do you know what's good because of that? You know what I mean? It's such a audience based reaction, right?
Yeah, it's very mechanical, I believe, because sometimes at least for me, it kind of goes based off of like how you read the room, and sometimes like little things make a huge difference. So if I just make a little, I don't know, like a little, like if my eyeballs switch to a different place, or my eyelids, you know, or if I turn my body in a 45 degree angle, certain little cadences where I think like just based how I kind of read the energy from the audience, I kind of naturally, like my body or my face just changes based off of like how I read, how the audience reactions are. And I kind of embed that into my material in the best way I possibly could. But yeah, it's very weird. Like,
that's awesome, though. I don't think that's weird. I think that's learning the craft. Like, you know what I mean? I feel like you're integrating every little detail, every little advantage. Your body is your advantage. You know what I mean? I know that sounds maybe a little like off, but you're using everything you have to create this thing and to give this energy so that people can enjoy it. So I don't look at it that way. I just look at it like, oh, he's like, that's mastering. You're getting into like really understanding the depths of it. Did you have any experiences with other comedians that you really liked?
Yeah. But I really made sure, like, especially like for the show, for this season, I wanted to have the writers to be stand-up comedians, and the ones that I already knew and or knew of and worked with and could also can write, you know. And so going to different comedy clubs around my areas, especially around Mass and Connecticut and around NYC, just kind of like you know, meeting different comedians and just kind of watching them and just also just kind of being friends. But then also the stand-up comedy in Tanzania that is brewing, which is a new thing that's going on out there. And it's still very new to the point where, like, you know, even my own family don't even know it exists. And so when I went out there to do stand-up, I went to Tanzania last year to do, I didn't go out there for stand-up. There was, like, you know, some family function things that was going on, but I wanted to also do my own thing. And so so I did stand-up at a comedy club over there called TZ Punchline, and it was cool. Like, it was a turnout, sold-out audience. You know, I did my same material. I just, you know, it kind of, like, manipulated it in a different way for the audience. But from me doing stand-up over there and meeting the comedians over there, so one of the comedians, I already knew prior to going over there, his name is Clayton Msosa. So I already knew him just from, chatting with him through WhatsApp and all that. And he became a writer on the show. And then when I was at Punchline, and I met another writer that I added onto the series, his name is Josh Faber. He's a stand up in Tanzania as well. And so, so I kind of wanted to have that included into the series so that just to have more narratives that isn't just from my own brain, punch up jokes, and then other comedians, Mo Musa, who is a comedian based in Connecticut, he's of Somali descent. You know, he's somebody that goes over the edge, which is like, okay, now I know where the line is.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, just over the edge. So I was like, okay, now I know where the line is. And then Chris Yates, you know, my guy, you know, like I said, we've been working together for a while back in Massachusetts. And so, you know, he's someone I was like trying to get him to do stand up for years. I'm like, dude, you say things that's funny all the time. Like, let's just try it, you know, just try it. So he ended up doing it, you know, and just kind of like just doing open mics and things like that. And just kind of build up, you know, and try to punch up these jokes, you know, the best way we possibly can. So that's kind of like how I'm trying to balance all of it.
Do you still have like a hunger to do comedy as well as like balancing with the show? Is that like a still like, I got to do this, I got to put something out, like, or is it, you know, just once in a while kind of thing?
Yeah, I think now how I treat stand-up is I took a lot of, well, I'll say for this year and the year and a half, I mean, a lot of my stand-up has been, now is being mainly been consumed producing the show because of just the many hats that that I have to wear. So, like, for the Matumbalas, you know, I was a showrunner and then also had to do the animations as well, character animations. And then another stand-up comedian as well, his name is Dan Brown. He's also based in Connecticut. He did the backgrounds for the series. Mm. So just another stand-up tied in with the show. But yeah, I mean, it was a lot of, so I was like, you know, have to balance a lot of these hats to kind of, you know, get the show up and producing these episodes. Now I've been going back here and there to mainly open mics just to kind of do new material.
Yeah, flex some muscles.
Not dueling.
Yeah,
just to kind of get, just kind of keep the sword sharp, you know, and just kind of keep that there. And I respect stand-up too much, you know, to the point where, like, I don't ever, you know, other comedians do this, but for myself, like, I don't like to go on stage feeling unprepared.
Yeah.
So I always have to feel like, all right, let me just get new jokes, new material. Let me just work it out, you know, and go to,
Zool,
you know.
I'm curious, who's your top five? Like, who do you have a route, like a Mount Rushmore of comics or whatever? Who do you like to listen to?
I haven't composed a list. I do have like very much like comedians that really, really like influenced me, me wanting to do it. And of course, growing up, you know, of course, enjoyed watching, you know, Eddie Murphy, Chappelle, and, you know, and I hate each time when we say this guy's name, we always have to put a disclaimer, but, you know, it is what it is.
Audiences,
y'all figuring, you know, yeah, you know, it's every time it's like a disclaimer, you know, it's just like, caution, you know, for you guys' awareness, I'm about to mention a name that may not be pleasing to your ears. Bill Cosby.
Oh gosh, I'm burning up. Oh, help me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. What are we going to do? We got to cancel this guy because he said a name. You know, so.
Can't even talk about
Bill
nothing.
Cosby.
Yeah. No, I mean,
you know,
his legendary art. I mean, come on. Like, it's hard. Like, I know you like the Little Bill Show. That show was underrated. That was a good show.
Man.
The Little Bill show was good.
Little Bill didn't harm nobody. I mean, I used to watch Little Bill and read Little Bill books. They banned Little Bill books.
I didn't even know that. I actually didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, they banned it. Yeah, it's like, you know, like Little Bill didn't have quaaludes. Like, what are you guys banning this kid for?
Yeah, he didn't know what the juice was. He didn't know the juice.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Little Bill was just drinking high C, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
No, it's probably chocolate milk with no, like, reservatives in it, so he wouldn't get fat.
Yeah, not at all. Yeah. And I didn't see no white women in Little Bill's show. You know?
He was safe. He didn't see no Karens. He got the Playboy.
No, I didn't see, Little Bill was not at the Playboy Mansion. You know?
Oh,
he was just trying to... He was just playing with the doll the whole time.
Yeah. Hey, what was that superhero's name? Because that was lit. That was a cool toy.
His name, it was some astronaut. Yeah.
Yeah. It was something dope. It was cool. And his dad listened to jazz. They had
His dad listened to jazz. That's how I almost got to jazz music. Big Bill was listening to jazz music, you know? So
yeah. And they all had these weird shaped heads. Like, it was supposed to unlock something. Like, it was like the perfect shape roundness. You know, it was crazy.
Very common, like just had a very like this kid, like him, like Little Bill and Caillou should do a versus who got the most bald head for a child.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that was something I never understood. It's like these kids are five. You know, but Fat Albert also big and Fat Albert for me was one of the biggest influences, like animation wise. To the point, like, even like I used to wear the Fat Albert FUBU shirts and, you know, stuff like
that.
Yeah.
That show made that, you know, clothing brand pop. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my influences from there, but when I got into high school, I would say like the comedian that made me say I want to be a comedian, is Keenan Ivory Wayans.
Mm.
when I was in my ice block, which was like study hall, I was watching, like Keenan had like a series of interviews for like the Television Academy YouTube page. And he was just pretty much just like talking about his career, and it was like a 3-hour long interview. And they broke it out to 3 parts. So I watched it, and that was the first time I've ever heard these 2 words together, comedy club. I didn't know what a comedy club was before I watched his interview. And so I started to go online and try to search comedy clubs in Springfield, Massachusetts, and there wasn't none. And the closest one I found was like Joker's Comedy Club, which was down in Connecticut. Funny Bone, which is, I believe, is in Hartford. So I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get there. But then I came across this open mic called Bishop's Lounge, which is in Northampton, Massachusetts. It's probably like 30, 35 minutes away from Springfield.
Yeah.
So, but Keenan Ivory Wayans was the one that really, that made me say, I'm going to do this because of just his story, how he went into comedy, and then him and Robert Townsend, how they said back in the 80s that they're going to just make their own stuff, and which was Hollywood Shuffle. And then, right after that, Keenan did, I'm Going to Get You, Sucker. And then, so that really was the thing that really kind of initiated in me. And then as I started getting more involved, that's when I started getting into like Larry David, and Mike Myers. So I've always been a fan of, but it was really like, all right, this is my, my pot right here.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought you would have picked Keenan. You know what I mean? Like, first of all, the Wayans name is a household name. They're just, they got heavyweights everywhere, you know, when it comes to comedy, which that was very interesting. You know, you never know what you're going to get out of that. That's why I like asking questions. So that was cool. That was really good, man. I appreciate that. Let's get into the Matumbulas. Let's talk the show. One of the first things I wanted to ask you, and hopefully you don't take it the wrong way, is I feel like, do you have a hard time with people giving the show a shot? There's the initial thing where it's like, this is a new show and people watch it. Do you have a hard time getting people to watch it? Because, you know, I felt a way before I watched it. You know, I looked at it and then I actually watched it. And I was like, this is really good. This is hilarious. Do you get that a lot? Do people ever mention that to you?
It's never been mentioned, but I can sense it. But only sense it from, you know, to be quite honest, I can only sense it from like, people from like my personal life or from like Tanzanians that I know personally.
Yeah.
But the ones who don't know me personally and they see it, they have like they really resonate with the show. Because I think like anything that's new, people don't accept it until it feels like it reached a certain level a certain like perception. So like as you mentioned earlier, so like when the show was just on YouTube, you know barely anybody paid attention. But when but once it got on Koi TV and then had Lil Rel, curated by Lil Rel, the same people that didn't see it on YouTube then started to watch it because now it has this connection.
Doesn't that make you mad? Doesn't that make you mad? Like, why does it take for somebody else to say something? Like, just watch it. Like, give things a shot. Like, stop being lame. You know, doesn't that that would make me so? Yeah, it bothers me. Like, why do people wait? Like, you could have been on a train, but now you gotta wait. Now you gotta wait for the thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's an old game. You know, yeah. Same game, different play. You know, that's how a lot of this stuff goes. So you know, it could be a bit irritating at times, but I can't get mad in terms of, you know, cause that's just how it is.
Yeah. I respect that. And
so, you know, so at least so for now, like I would say, like we were just at, a couple of weeks ago. So Quelly TV. So, we got invited, to go to
right?
Afrotech.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that came out of left field, you know, like, you know, I definitely was not expecting to get flued out and to get, you know, you go to this, you know, Austin, Texas and, you know, and to have, to join with other great quality TV filmmakers to being down there to screen our work. And I personally felt like we were like the underdogs there. You know, you have all these big companies and A-list celebs talking, and, you know, and like during my screening, Timbaland had a talk. So my mind, I'm like, okay, like I know how it is, you know, like people may be more prone to see Timbaland and how he made beats, you know, and then, you know, and people not knowing who we are. But I felt confident because I was like, it's thousands of people here and it's going to trickle in. Like folks, we're the only like filmmaker event that's going on in this whole conference. So people are going to be curious and there's free mimosas. So people got prone to the interest of our event, and Deshauna, who, you know, her goal was to get at least 400 by total of the conference, but we had like over 300 in our first day.
Dang, that's awesome.
Of the screening.
Wow.
You know, and the people that, so when, as far as like on our side from a Tumbalist, you know, it's different. It's a big difference from hearing real laughs of the content in person versus seeing laughing emojis, you know?
It's probably like, way better reaction. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because sometimes I call it troll support. You know how it is, like on social media, people can post, you know, they can share your post, retweet, or put a laughing emoji.
I like that. Good job. Fire.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's the same phrase. Yo, keep it up, fam. I see you shining. Yo, remember me when you blow up. You know, it's like,
It didn't take no effort. They didn't even think about it. It's autopilot.
Yeah.
They really hate it, though. They really hate it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They suck. They eating that nasty sub at lunch right now, making a comment, don't like themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it is. And the irony of those people who do that, it's like they will say those phrases, but then when they see you in person, they ask you, yo, so what you been up to, fam? And it's just like, didn't you make a comment on my post?
I think that's the awkwardness of engagement. Like, we haven't seen someone in a while. I think that's just like regular awkward, like, what do I talk about? Like, when people don't know what to talk about, they say stuff like that.
It's an icebreaker. It's like ways to kind of like break into the conversation, or it's like, just in case if you were able to continue to build on your leverage, then they can say, yo, man, I've been supporting you since the beginning. You know, I was there with you since the beginning. But it's like, did you watch the show? And that's when you kind of get them hesitant. It's like, all right, like, you see me, you know, you keep it up, fams. But, you know, did you watch the show? Did you click on the link? Did you subscribe? Did you, you know?
Yeah. Those are simple steps. Those are more intentional steps, which you should do that. Yeah, show support. Let me ask you this. How did you, versus like the many different forms of storytelling and animation visually, how did you pick what you did? You could have picked 3D. You could have picked real life and actual. You could have used clay. Like, was that a hard process to come to that conclusion that you did as far as visually for the show?
Yeah. In the very, very beginning, this is a project that I was working on when I was in college, and it was like kind of like an early version of the Matumbas, but it wasn't the Matumbas at the time. It was called Babu and Bilal, and it was a 3D animated project that I was having assistance with an adjunct that worked at the digital media program in the college that I was at. And we had like 5 minutes of the animation. It was supposed to be like 15 minutes, but he kind of got, you know, he pretty much got busy with other criteria with his job and everything. So he wasn't able to quite finish. So he was using Autodesk Maya. And so I was taking upon myself, like, hey, you know, maybe I can just try to finish this on my own. And I was tripping, you know. I was like, I can't, you know, I don't understand this, you know. It's like, I took some workshops, but it just felt so advanced. So I wasn't able to really complete that project, which I kind of looked at that project as a failure because I didn't finish it. That's how I kind of see it as. It's like, if I didn't finish something, it's more of a failure rather than if I put it out there and, you know, at least I got it done, right?
Or it's not time yet.
Yeah. I think it was like, that particular project, it was, because at this point it's like, I probably won't even do it because that was kind of like, I just kind of used that as the, I decided to take that as like the roots of putting it into the Matumbulas, but I changed up the story. And so based off of my skills that I kind of picked up on when I was in college, I took a couple like Adobe Photoshop classes and I came across Adobe Illustrator. And then the program that really changed it for me was Adobe Character Animator. And that software, it's not your traditional frame by frame animation. A lot of it is trigger based and behavior tools that you can implement onto your character that you create on Illustrator or Photoshop based off of how you rig the puppet, as they call it, on Character Animator. And so once I started to kind of learn that, you know, off this YouTube channel called OK Samurai, and just kind of to that. Yeah, just like a very like upbeat dude named David, and just talking about everything about Character Animator and the workflow and all these different courses. And I just started to just dive myself into that, you know, and I was taking this in heed, and I was like, hey, let me just continue to do this. And as I stated earlier, you know, I was like, let me just take my stand up routine and make it into an animated short. And then I just started just, hey, let me just make more, you know, and with no plan.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was just like,
but you gotta admit, like, that's a hard creating anything visually is hard. It's time consuming. And I heard you talk about like an episode can take up to a month or so. And I was just like, whoa, like, you know, it instantly, I got more respect because that takes discipline and everyone doesn't have discipline. How much of the discipline becomes a habit into continually producing shows like that? And can it be an addiction?
Yeah, it's, yeah, I think it is a bit of an addictive trait. And it does require a lot of days of me, you know, like I've had like spans where maybe like a week span or maybe like week and a half span where I never like left the house. And it was just mainly because of trying to just finishing up a particular scene and finishing up the storyboard, you know, and then like getting that going. And then especially for this season, you know, we documented everything that we did from the beginning of September up till now. And in the process, we're going to drop an episode at the end where it's pretty much what we call like the making of the Matumbulas. And essentially it's like showing like the journey of like being in the house, creating, doing these writer Zooms, instead of writer rooms, writer Zooms, and doing all these different things. And yeah, and like a lot of times it's just me being at the crib, putting these characters together and putting the storyline together and then doing the animations.
Yeah.
And then at some point it was just like a bridge where I had to focus on finish up the animation and simultaneously have to write new episodes and go all the way to, Bushwick, Brooklyn to do the voiceover recording sessions, for another episode simultaneously. So mainly, yeah, I really, cause I felt like, and I was saying this at my panel at AfroTech a couple of weeks ago, I was saying to the audience there, and, cause somebody asked me, a similar question like that in the Q&A. And I said for myself, you know, I took it as trust because Chloe TV gave me this opportunity and I didn't want them to feel like they wasted this. Like they gave me this budget and then that was it. You know, like I wanted to prove like I'm worthy of this opportunity by getting this done. And I wanted to pretty much exemplify that the best way I could. And in terms of also putting it out there, like, hey, like, other networks back then, you know, when they started the originals, you know, it was the originals that catapult the network. So the Simpsons catapult the, you know, Fox, or how Rugrats catapult Nickelodeon and et cetera. So I was like, this was like one of the attempts, you know, out of the many attempts I had. So yeah, it was just, I was like, I have to be locked in to do this because if I don't really nobody else won't, you know?
Yeah.
And then of course, like my great team of people, our producers, everybody that have been in the production, our illustrious voiceover talent as well. Yeah, I was like, okay, like, they all trust in me to get this done. By the end of the day, they also still have their own thing too.
Yeah.
And they also have their own project as well. So I still have to be the guy to get this done because nobody else won't.
You know, Zul, you have this beautiful way of like opening your hands to whatever. It seems like you're pretty generous with giving things, you know, like even with the team, you're not, you know, most people when they're creating something, they want you to solely be focused on your thing. You know what I mean? And you're welcome the creative having other adventures. You welcome them bringing something to the table. And, you know, that's something that I really respect about you, because a lot of people in your position wouldn't do that. They would be kind of like a mini tyrant. And I'm sure you've probably seen some of that. You know, you've probably seen some of them, you know, be disrespectful to team members or whatever. And it seems like you have this open hand, like, look, use this, help the show, make it good. We still want to create a good product. We want a good episode. We want a good, you know, season. We want the show to be big. But I also like that you're doing your own thing, which kind of brings this flavor to it, you know. And on top of that, people who are working, their muscles look different than people who are sitting, you know. You know what I mean? And that's a powerful display of strength, is when you can have other characters and people around you who are also strong. It just shows how good of a leader you are. And you know, there's this question I have for you, and I found it very interesting. I don't know why it kind of stuck out to me, but you know, do you still have this desire to have the show be on TV in Africa? And what's that been like? Yeah.
Oh, now we're going to a great destination right here. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, man. You know, kids, I got a story that I got you to tell. Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. So, again, back to, like, everything goes back to intention. Mm. And purpose. So the series. So, you know, I went to Zanzibar back in 2018, and there was this conference called DISCOP, which is like a TV and film market. And at this time, I just graduated from college. I went to community college. I was like, all right, I'm only doing 2 years of this, you know. And I was 20 at the time. And so, my family and everything, you know, they're all based in Tanzania and Zanzibar and all that. But I was like, I need to go here for business. So I went to this conference called DISCOP, which is like a TV and film market. And this particular one, it was DISCOP Africa. So DISCOP Africa essentially is like, if you are a content producer and you have a TV series, web series, or a film that you would like to seek distribution towards other like African paid TV channels or airplanes, you know, any other facet of distribution, streaming networks. And if you're a buyer, then your job is to buy the content. Or if you're a co-producer, you're there to, you know, to hop on other projects and collaborate. Mm-hmm. So I was there. It was a 3-day thing, and I was going to different seminars, a lot of different great classes, you know, that I took in heed just to kind of develop my knowledge. But the people that I met, the channels at the time, they were kind. You know, at the time I had my comedy sketches and then, you know, the earlier version of the Babu and Bilal animation 3D. And it was, at the beginning, it was okay. Like, it felt good just to first talk to people in the business, because a lot of times a lot of us, when we say, well, how do we navigate, how do we meet these people, and it's just really about being in the mix. So I was like, yeah, how do you get into the mix? So it's like, okay, I gotta pay this pass, $200. Okay, now I'm at this market, let me talk to these people. And I talked to this talent agent, she's a literary agent from ICN Partners, and you know, it's funny how I went all the way to Zanzibar have somebody to tell me to go to New York. Like the irony of life. She was like, yeah, you've been in Massachusetts? Oh, yeah. And I was like, well, why don't you go to New York? And I was just like, you're right. And it's like 2 hours away from me, you know? So,
yeah.
But yeah, so you know, to kind of tie it all in, so like at that same time, there was a Zanzibar International Film Festival, and there was this guy that worked there who I would, you know, remain, you know, keep his name out of it. But right before I got there, he was like, ah, you know, brother, you know, when you come over here, you know, I'll get you a free pass. And, you know, everything will be good. Everything will be picked up for you. When you get here, just meet me, and I'll show you around. But you got the free pass. I was like, all right, great. So when I got over there and I met him, and he was showing me around and everything, it felt good. So then he told me, okay, so go upstairs, and you can get your free pass from another coworker that works for me. So I go upstairs, and I got the pass, and his coworker was just like, oh, that would be $100. I was like, huh? That would be $100. So I was like, what are you talking about? He was just like, that'd be $100. So I said, let me talk to such and such. He said, yeah, go ahead and go talk to him. So I didn't say nothing. I kept my day, you know, kept it going, my day very nice. And then I get hit with text messages, bombarded with text messages of this dude. He was just like, yeah, the pass is going to be $100. And I'm like, bro, you told me right before I got here that it was going to be for free. And in a verbatim, yeah, he told me, he said, the system has changed. And then that day of the first day of the film festival, I'm getting hit with text messages over and over again. And he was just like, please, I need to feed my family. Please, I need $100. Please. And I got so annoyed that I eventually like just told my parents about the situation. And then, you know, my dad, you know, he grew up in Zanzibar, so he knows how these people are. So we went up to their office and told them, like, pretty much he was telling them that they're a bunch of idiots. And then, and I just gave them my pass back because I'm like, I'm not dealing with this. I'm not giving y'all no bread. And then they were just like, I was trying to get the pass for this cop, and they're trying to gatekeep that. But I'm like, that's something I actually paid for. And I'm like, give me the pass for that. And they said, well, you need to have an email confirmation. Then I showed them that, and they were just like, okay, you can pick up the pass tomorrow. So that first day was like my first experience of knowing what this whole stuff was about. Mm-hmm. So since that time, up until last year, I've been going back and particularly dealing with these different companies that were supposed to like help bring the Matumbalas onto these TV networks, and not just only Tanzania, but in the Ivory Coast and other countries in Francophone Africa. And to the point where I had, you know, like over $1,000 stolen from me.
Wow.
Because of a bad business deal of somebody who was trying to dub the series in French and then to sell it to these Francophone channels that agreed to the series to be aired on there. And then I've had certain sales agents, they couldn't sell the show. And then when I went back to Tanzania last year and I sat down with a popular television, not just television, but just a big company that also has a TV station over there. And I told them about, you know, the show. And by this time, I'm giving them all the analytics. It's the number one most watched show on quality TV, all these different things.
That's awesome.
And so, you know, appreciate it. Thank you so much. And, you know, I wish they said the same thing to me. They were just like, yeah, you know, that sounds nice, but you know, we're not gonna, you know, they were just like, yeah, we're not gonna pay you anything. You know, it's just like they just essentially was just like, we only want to buy, this is verbatim, they told me that they only want to buy content that are dramas or that cater to women. And the thing is like the content that they do buy, they are dramas from like Venezuela or from Turkey. But when something that is actually derivative from the country or from the culture, they weren't so keen on it. And
wow, they're hurting culture. They're hurting their own culture. Like it's insane.
Yeah. And to their point of view, they felt that the show, in their minds, they felt like Tanzanians are sensitive. So they felt that if they air this, they're going to feel like, you know, because it is a conservative country to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And so they felt that if they air this, it's going to put too much shock value and it's going to leave people mad. But in my mind, I'm like, that's what you think about yourself, though, not the people. You don't speak for the people. You just sit up here and you're just making preconceived notions because you don't want to just pay folks.
Yeah.
You know, that's the real
You don't
want
to take the risk. So, you got to when it comes to art. Absolutely. You got to.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So and that's kind of like what the lot of the system is. It's like a lot of it is non-risk taking because they want to keep their tranquility as much as possible. They don't want, as the old saying goes, if it's not broken, don't fix it, right?
Yeah.
And they want to keep the same people that's been in these same positions for 20 plus years. They want to keep them there so that they don't want their job to be displaced. And then the last thing they want is an American to come there and take their job. You know, that's how they kind of label me as. So,
wow.
So yeah, so it's been like, you know, and there's so much more. I will probably one of these days, maybe write a tell-all book, you know, years later, but, there's so much more that has gone into that same trajectory, but
do you
yeah,
plan to, so, it seems like you don't, I get the sense like you're not going to give up, like you're gonna keep trying. It feels like you're constantly fighting the gatekeepers, which sucks. That sucks in any industry, any field, but it seems like you experience way more. And these gatekeepers also are scammers. It seems like they're just trying to get the money.
Yeah. It's some of them, they definitely, either just take the money and run, or they don't want to give you the investment. And I can speak for other, filmmakers around my age group, because a lot of it's ageism too. You know, like when I went to the TV network over there, and I went there with, my whole family wanted to show up, you know, it's like, guys, it's like, I'm not signing a big deal, man. I'm just going there for a meeting. You know, it was
that's
so much going
come
on.
So that has to be, come on, you gotta, that's awesome. I wish my family would show up. They probably like, give me a dollar.
No, they didn't show up to support me. They came because they wanted to get free lunch. And that's what happened. They went, my aunt went to the TV network and went inside and tried to make it seem like they work there, and they got free lunch.
Yo, listen to me. Hold on. Time out. You're in there having a meeting and your family shows up to get some free food?
Yeah, they got, yeah.
Was it good? Yeah, did they complain? It wasn't that good.
No, it was good. Like, I would give them that. Like, at least the food was delicious. But it's like, you know, but
wow.
Can you guys do this after? Or it's like, well, this is their moment.
Yo, you got to use this. You have to use this. This is it just me or is this hilarious? Because I feel like that's hilarious. That you got.
I got too many layers. So, yeah. You know, too many layers. But to this point, when I went inside, and in the lobby, I was standing there with my dad, and the people that was working there, they were paying no never mind to me. You know, mm-hmm. They were greeting my dad because, of course, you know, it's an elderly respect thing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But they thought that I was there kind of going along with the ride, you know, mm-hmm. And like my dad's going to find a babysitter to watch me or something like that.
Wow.
But then when it was time for the meeting, you know, the lady who I was meeting with, she knew that she had to meet with me because I spoke to her prior to that. So the other people in the lobby is like, oh, so he's the one that's having a meeting. And to some people that they don't like that type of sentiment because it's this ageism thing where it's like, if you're young, a lot of it's like, if you're young, you're not supposed to be that smart. Like if you're, it's supposed to be like the elders are the ones who are automatically supposed to be the ones with the wisdom, the ones with the intellectualness.
So it's a belittling experience? Is that, because I mean, most people don't know what it's even like to get in a room like that. You know what I'm saying? Like yeah. that's a crazy opportunity, but like, is it a belittling experience, or do you kind of have to like stand your ground and be strong and be confident in yourself while you're talking about the thing?
Well, because I felt it, I couldn't get emotional about it. I just had to be rational. Cause I've been talking about this stuff alongside with like, you know, with my brother and my close relatives since when we were kids, when we used to have like this community or event for Tanzanians when we were kids. You know, I used to, you know, proclaim like, man, they're not thinking about the youth. You know, they're not thinking about the kids. You know, it just seems like they're just prioritizing on the adults here. And we're just kind of like pushed in the wayside. So I kind of already knew what it was since growing up, but it made me understand, you know, when I went there last year already in my mid-20s and just kind of like understood, like, okay, this goes all the way up. Like, this ain't just a family thing. This is ain't just a community thing. This is also a corporate thing.
Yeah.
And based off of all these different branches, it made me go, okay, this is just how it's set up and this is just how it is. So I can't really get it is irritating, but I knew like I can't get emotional, so I still have to like profess what I am selling at the end of the day. Like, I'm still selling my project.
Your so, content, yeah, your work, your life's work. Yeah. It's a big deal. You know, it's not a little deal, it's a big deal. Is there an urge to go to the more commercialized networks? Have you had that? What's your experience been like with that?
I've had like a couple meetings, certain development executives and about the series. And they were all good meetings. You know, they were actually went very well. I feel like at this point, you know, of course, you know, everything as far as this business is concerned, like any business, is all about, you know, your relationships and your connections and all that. But felt like, okay, like, I think I'm going to definitely just dive into having more different projects. And I feel like something like Matumbula's, this particular project is something that I think I'm just going to just solely just 100% own. And then everything else I do can be, you know, for other ownerships in different ways. But something about Matumbula's for me,
it is. It's so special. Like, I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just special. Something. Yeah. Because even with my agreement, so like with my contract that I have with Koi TV going into this next season, for it to be an original series, you know, I own 100% of my intellectual property, which is, you know, let alone not only rare, but barely doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't.
If I presented the show, you know, to any network and like to any other network, any other streaming network that is an original series, you know, Netflix is going to own that, Hulu is going to own that, etc. So it is rare to have an original series on a streaming network where myself as a creator to own 100% of my IP. And on top of that, to have full creative control where I didn't feel pressured to implement certain things that the network want me to say or want me to project, where I can just solely go based off of my own creative instincts. And it was great. You know, it didn't feel like I had a binoculars on me all the time. And so and as well as with my team. So so I definitely just look at it more in that route of like building this on a grassroots level. We're actually planning for 2024. We're going to different colleges, universities to do screenings around the Northeast region.
That's awesome.
And appreciate it. Thank you. And just doing this in a community outreach initiative rather than just like, all right, here's a cartoon and here's something funny, but also there's a curriculum and also a community outreach that's based off of Matumbula's, where it's not just, you're just seeing a cartoon, but now, you know, we're talking about intellectual property. We're talking about tech and animation. How can we provide resource within that? Because, you know, anybody can go viral and, you know, and go crazy on Twitter, but then that stuff phases out.
Yeah.
So what are the
rules
to build actual...
Yeah,
absolutely. How can to build longevity and to make people feel they're a part of this journey rather than creating some type of separatism? Yeah. Like, oh, I'm up here on this pedestal and y'all just got to see what I'm doing.
Yeah, I feel that with you. I hope you hear that. Like, I think that is rare and I think it's going to take you a lot. Just that part of your character is going to take you a lot. And I feel that. And you know what another thing is? I feel that collaboration is important to you, and I think that is a big thing too. You know, people don't want to waste their time. They don't want to feel like they're just meaninglessly working on someone else's vision. They'll do it if they believe in it, if they really believe in the thing. And I think with you, like, man, for real, sky's the limit, 100%. And I think at one day you're going to be looking like, oh, this is all making sense, you know. But right now it's like the work, this is the work. That's, you can't skip the work. You can't forget about the work. And a lot of times people try to run away from the work. They think it's, you know, if they sit on their hands and this thing is solely good, it'll take care of itself. No, you got to do press. You got to go talk to people. You got to introduce people to the thing, the brand, the sound. And it's a long process. How do you balance that? You did talk about earlier about having so many different hats. How do you balance? How do you forgive yourself in certain areas? Because while you're focusing on one thing, something's lacking. Like, how do you do all that?
I feel like for me, it just really comes from God, just a testament of faith, I'm not an imam, you know, I'm not a sheikh, to then start, delivering, da'wahs about Islam, but as far as like what really, the attribute is just really, my faith, and that's really the main concept for me in terms of like how to keep going, because it keeps me happy, has perspectives on me. My grandparents, I didn't meet them, but my grandfather and my grandmother on each side of my family have said the same thing, and pretty much what they said was like, anything that comes too fast is the work of the devil.
Dang, and that's what a bar. Said,
like that's the thing. Those guys, they seen a lot of life.
Yeah, that's a bar.
Yeah, that's and to their explanation, it was just because, when you get something too quickly and too fast, you're not going to be as appreciative of it. You're not going to understand the road it took, the detours, and understanding like the journey of it, and just how do you navigate that, right? And just being grateful is a very big thing, and learning your pitfalls. So when something comes to you that fast, you're going to think everything is easy for you, and you're not going to grow. And I know that on this landscape, it's been a journey that, okay, I started this project back in 2019. And now at this point it's like, I still got to count my blessings. I never thought to be on a streaming network. I never thought to get flown to Austin, Texas, and I never thought to, to make money off of this, let alone like, and money is like, was like the main intent, but it's just like, wow, like our royalties, everybody during the strike was talking about their residual checks that they get from,
sad.
From HBO, sad. And it's like $4.
Yeah, I saw that. Wow.
$4. And meanwhile, like, our royalties from Quality TV, I mean, depending on like how many minutes you get, I mean, it's pretty good. It's not that bad.
Don't say it. Don't tell nobody. Don't.
Yeah. It's, I'll say this, it's more than $4.
Yeah.
Depending on how your minutes, now granted, yes, like it's very possible to make like, 80 cents, but that's like if how your, minutes is watched. But if you have good enough minutes watched, you really can't complain. And so, but most of all, other than, regarding to that, it's just about knowing like this journey is about taking things in a contentful way and being grateful and understanding to learn, like all those things that happened to me, especially like what's going on with me in Africa. Like, I used to be very upset about it, but now I'm just very grateful for it because it got me to understand how to do business and how to read contracts and how to deal with the corporate execs and sales agents. And it got me good material, let me get better at my writing, if they think this is offensive, wait until they see this, let me go in this direction, So all in all, it's, I always say to myself, like, regardless what happens, as long as I have my faith, as long as I practice, I continue to practice my faith, no harm, as long as I have that, because like I can make all the money, have all the fame and status, but if I don't have my religion, then none of this matters. It's like, all right, you just burn out quicker than you can ever imagine.
Let me ask you, I got two more questions. I'm gonna get out of here. You've been super gracious with your time. What are you the most proud of, and of out of everything you've done, you've taken risks, you're doing the thing, you have your show on the network, you're traveling, you're getting opportunities. What are you the most proud of?
I probably would say it's just getting the work done.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really it. I mean, you know, because we can't control, you know, we can't control anything after that, right? Like, okay, you put it out there in the world, and now it's the world is their, you know, judgment. But I think more than anything for me is just getting the work done, you know. You know, just kind of getting so used to noticing so many individuals these days that say so much, especially on social media, you know, like you go on people's IG accounts and you see their bio, like, you know, I am a yoga instructor / biochemist / rapper / poet / you know, I like to stretch, you know, like, and I also have a master's degree in cricket.
And you're a professional coffee drinker too.
Yeah, professional coffee drinker, and I also grow cocoa beans in Colombia. Like all these random things on IG bio, but it's like you're not, like they say, a master of none is a master. It's like you're not a master of none of this stuff, you know. It's like it's a bunch of things, and then from there you're not finishing anything. So to me, it's just mainly like I just want to get things done and just finish it, because if I don't, then it's like that's more of like the lingering in me. It's like, man, I, you know, why am I out right now? I didn't finish what I was supposed to do. So it's just mainly that.
What would you say to someone who has a similar spirit to you and pursuing their own endeavors in life? Like what would be your encouragement to them if you could say something to them?
I would say, if you say you're going to do it, just do it, but make sure to have the right people around you. I think that kind of just goes a long way, because, you know, if anything, you know, we obviously can't do anything by ourselves.
Correct.
So it's like, how do you align with people that are in the same mission as you? And, you know, and that also took a lot from me as well. That took me a while to kind of find.
What are some signs? People. Like, how do you determine if someone's a right person for the journey?
If they're not pompous, that's simple. If they're not pompous, like I've encountered too many people just like on a local scale, and you probably, you know how it is.
Yes,
like in a local scale,
yeah.
Like there's people who really feel like they've done something, but that's like a big fish, small pond mentality.
Correct.
So they do a couple things and they really be like we have an episode this season, it's called Hopeless Got Talent. And this episode is essentially about around those lines, you know, where one of the main characters, Rajab, he goes on his talent show. But he's just bombarded by people in this talent show who really think that they're a big deal in this small town in the series called Hopeland.
Yeah.
And you know, and the host of this talent show named Jerome, you know, and the joke we have in there, he was like a background vocalist and keyboardist for this one hit wonder R&B artist named Sammy. But in this small town, since nobody really like made it out in that way ever or got close to any of like proximity of that, he comes back and feel like I'm the hometown king, Jerome. And that's kind of like something where, you know, everything stems from real life in a way where it's like, you know, people do a couple things and they use that as their catalyst onto other people. So to me, it's just like, hey man, like, especially coming out here to New York and, you know, before I even moved here, just coming out here with Chris and going to different filmmaker events and just kind of like talking to people who have done, you know, a couple of works here and there for HBO, but still will say that they barely scratched the surface. So it's just kind of like that humbling attitude where it's like, hey man, you know, we all trying to figure it out. Let's just, you know, let's continue to go on this journey together. And then whatever project, whatever, you know, I'm working on your project, if you're working on my project, at the end of the day, it's supposed to benefit both of us, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to, make sure that, okay, like we all are benefiting from this. We all are getting credit from this, and we all are gaining something tangible out of this, rather than solely based off, you know, getting off of the, from one person. That doesn't feel comfortable. And so that's really it. You know, let's just don't be a pompous individual.
You know, Zul, I really appreciate you. I appreciate the person. I feel like I met the man behind the many hats, and I'm very appreciative of you. Real quick before you go, where can people find you? How do you want people to connect with you? Also, you do people go subscribe, go follow, go watch the Matumbulas on Quality TV. Very good. I'm still catching up. I watched a lot of episodes. My favorite right now, I don't know why I liked it, but the one episode where I think the daughter walked in. No, it was the youngest. It was the youngest one walked in the room, and my man's was playing some music, but it actually was fire, though. It was it was actually fire. So, but yeah, make sure you subscribe. But where can people find you and connect with you?
Yeah, I say first and foremost, you can follow the Matumbulas all over social media. So, the Matumbulas, Matumba spelled MATUMBILAS. And all over the socials, you can follow us and be part of our journey. And then on my personal side, Z-Master Productions, which is my production company. My private Instagram, which is Zul Manzi, I barely post on that. Like, that's the real me. You know, if I wasn't in this business, the real me is the Zul Manzi account, where I have 3 posts in 4 years. So that's my real guy, my real personality. But yeah, but most of all, check out the Matumbulas, and you know, check out season 1 and season 2, both streaming on Quelly TV, and subscribe. You know, the first 7 days is free, and then there's different plans that you guys can select for your choosing, for your liking, and catch us because we got more episodes also coming up for this next season, and looking forward to checking out y'all responses.
All right, Zul, thank you so much. Thanks for coming on the True Tone Show.
Hey, pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. Really had a great time.
All right, people, that was an amazing episode with Zul. He came on the True Tone Show, and he gave you guys some goodies. There was a lot in there. He gave you some business. He talked to you about comedy. He talked to you about his life, and he talked to you about his show. It's something that's close to his heart, the Matumbulas. A great show. And a very good show. You know, take the risk and go check it out, and you'll be shocked at what happens on the other side. And as always, was there truth to this conversation, or was it just noise? I'll let you guys decide. It's your boy Amante, and we out of here.